And we are back for the next half hour. We are going to be talking about Las Cruces museums, and that's something that I think is kind of an overlooked asset that we have here in town, our many great museums.
Yes.
They will be the object for, or the subject for, the upcoming October series for the Academy for Learning and Retirement. And I will go through these real quickly. They will start on Tuesday, October 7th. With Emily Wilson from the Taylor Museum Historic Site and Alexandria McKinney. They are both from the Taylor Museum, Taylor Messia Historic Site. On Thursday, October 9th, it will be Dr. Kelly Jenks, who is joining us today from the University Museum at Kent Hall at NMSU. On Tuesday, October 14th, Dr. Steve Loring, who is also joining us today, and he is with the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum. And then it will wrap up on Thursday, October 16th, with Marissa Sage. She is from the NMSU Art Museum. And as always, those are going to be on the Doniana Community College campus. You can sign up for those ahead of time by going on the DACC website, or you could just show up there at the auditorium and join in. And so, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. Dr. Jenks, since I guess you're the first to go chronologically here, why don't we start with you and tell us a little bit about the University of Museum at NMSU and what you're going to be talking about during your presentation.
Okay. So the University Museum at NMSU is the oldest museum on campus. It was founded in 1959 out of a motivation to create a museum, the idea that NMSU is lacking a fundamental aspect of university life, that it should have a place to serve as a repository for things of importance and relevance to the community and to the broader region.
Before 1959, we didn't have that?
No.
That surprises me.
I know. And so it initially was kind of a repository for various disciplines and fields across campus.
Just an archive, essentially.
Yeah, an object archive.
Object
largely,
archive.
Yeah. But it has since really pretty early on, since the initial founding, the person who became the first museum director was a professor of sociology and anthropology. Those departments were merged. They have since split, but it has largely been managed by anthropologists for a period of time, a long period of time, from the 70s to the 90s. It also housed a cultural resource management division who did archaeological work throughout the Southwest. So we have pretty extensive archaeological collections. We have a lot of historical collections relating to this community and this region, including a lot of things from urban renewal, things that are connected to the Amador family. And we also have sort of unique and odd collections. We'll talk about them as sort of ethnographic, different cultural items from around the world, but a lot of things that were connected with different faculty members at NMSU and their research that they didn't, you know, that they wanted to leave someplace connected with their work. And so they're also stored at the University Museum.
And I know, can you talk a little bit about, I looked online, the two exhibits that you have now are Corn Mother, Her Story in the Southwest, and Ceramics and Culture, A Window into Casas Grandes. Can you talk a little bit about those exhibits?
Sure. So, well, and that actually relates to our museum is maybe a little bit different because it's a university museum. So we're a repository for items of heritage, but we're also a teaching and research institution. And so education is part of everything we do. We teach museum classes and classes about objects in there, and we have our students learn how to work in a museum by actually working in a museum. So both of those exhibits that you just mentioned were created by students. Corn Mother, Her Story in the Southwest was the master's project for Sabrina Gonzalez, who graduated last spring. And her master's project was to use objects in our collection to tell a story about the cultural significance of corn to indigenous cultures in the Southwest. And then the Ceramics and Culture about Casas Grandes, also known as the Paquimé archaeological site in northern Chihuahua, that was actually done by a museum field methods class. So we've had pottery on exhibit for a long time. We're trying to actually give some of the pots a break by moving them up into storage and then rotating through pots that can tell a story about the culture that they were produced by. And so the first one that's being featured is this, the pottery of the Casas Grandes archaeological culture, some specifically from the site of Casas Grandes or Pakime. And this is, the entire exhibit was crafted, like the story was crafted by students. There's a really beautiful mural of horned serpents around the outside representing water that was done by Elizabeth Swanson, who's an undergraduate art major. There are various, obviously, Pakime pots on display, but connected to different aspects of what we can learn about the culture of Casas Grandes. So about their cosmology, their beliefs, their practice of raising exotic birds, their irrigation, their agriculture, all of this kind of represented through the pottery that we have.
Hmm. And what hours is the museum open?
Museum is open Tuesday through Saturday, 12 to 4 to the public. Okay. And we have dedicated parking right near our courtyard entrance, two spots.
And Steve Loring, you have the next presentation coming up on October 14th, I'm sorry, about the Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum, which I think all of us know, along with being a museum, is really kind of one of the gathering places in Las Cruces for all kinds of different events and things that go on out there. Can you tell us a little bit about what your presentation is going to touch on?
Yeah, so our presentation, excuse me, the Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum is really unique among museums because we have living exhibits. We have animals, cattle, sheep, horses, that the other museums in the system in here in New Mexico simply don't have. Well, there's a place to north of the Los Lunas, no, the Los Luceros property has some sheep, but otherwise we're it.
Yeah.
Our message really is that agriculture is the foundation of society. And it affects the quality of life of everybody. And what we're talking about is not merely the history of agriculture in New Mexico, but also the heritage of which means, what does it mean? How did it come to affect us today? What are we doing today? And how is it going to help us shape the future? Mm-hmm. So that's part of the mission of the museum, is just simply not to be a repository, but also to tell the stories of what happened and why, make connections.
Yeah, and the cultural developments that come out from the going back to your corn, yes.
Exactly. In fact, one of the new areas that we've been switching over, used to be called the Discovery Garden, is now called, been renamed the Jardín de Tortugas Pueblo, the Tortugas Pueblo Garden. And it's not quite open yet, but it's going to have – it's telling the stories of traditional agriculture, living traditions, I want to emphasize too, because a lot of people think that something happened in the past, it's over and it's done.
Yes.
And that's the end of it. It's a continuing story, and we're in the current chapter, but this chapter is still alive and well. The Three Sisters, the traditional agricultural methods, but we also want to show how technology and innovation can coexist with traditional practices, because we have what we call the moon tree, one of the seeds that was grown from one around the moon with the Artemis mission. And one of those trees grown by the U.S. Forest Service is planted in that garden as kind of a symbol. And the Tortugas Pueblo community is very much in favor of this, of having innovation and traditional practices coexist.
Yes.
They complement each other.
So the Tortugas community is assisting with this garden.
They have assisted, yes. They've in the design, to make sure we have things correct as far as traditional and representation, which things that they would like to see us emphasize as far as telling the stories, and also giving some labor for helping us get things installed, and we certainly appreciate that as well.
Yeah.
Probably your biggest exhibit, I would think, and it's been there for a while now, is on the Lincoln County Wars. It's the one that has the statue of Billy the Kid at the entrance. And I remember when that first went up, we interviewed the woman who had curated that, who put it together. And I was just so impressed by how pained she was at trying to tell that story fairly, because it has been told so often in this part of the country by both sides, and everybody has their take on it. And it was very important for her that all sides be heard and feel like they were respected, but that the story was told truthfully. And in a way that if you take the time and you start at the first panel and you slowly go all the way through it, at the end you will have a good understanding of not only that war, but the whole cattle, loving goodnight trail and what led to the Lincoln County. I mean, it just does a terrific job of telling that story with artifacts and photographs. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, it's interesting you picked that one because it's actually a very interesting one for the reasons it tells the story of an industry that's had a huge impact in this area. And a lot of people don't understand the sides and what were the factors that have influenced and why we got into the problems that came in. The story is that the Billy the Kid would not have existed if it had not been for the cattle industry emerging. So it's an interesting wave that was put together. We have the statue of Billy the Kid that Bob Diven created, and everybody is drawn because it's about Billy the Kid.
Yes.
It's really not. It's about the cattle industry.
Right. Yeah.
But the hook is Billy the Kid.
That's right.
That's how we draw people in. And by the way, this is what happened, and this is what the environment that Billy the Kid was working in, the industry, the social tensions that were going on, and being able to tell that story is a neat thing. And you're right. By the time you work your way through, and it's not all just looking at something on a wall and reading a panel. It's, there's some interactive, there's some movie, there's some visuals. So it's not just simply static. There's there's some things for people to engage with. And we try to do that in the rest of the museum as well. But that's been you're right, it's been there for several years, and there are plans now to what are we going to be doing next. And we have some interesting ideas for that. And the people up in the Lincoln Historic Site area and Fort Stanton are kind of interested in getting some of that because that's the area where a lot of stuff happened.
So,
this has been a really interesting, gets a lot of attention.
Yeah.
So, for both of you, what is the value of a museum to a community? Why should we be spending our tax dollars? Clearly, this is not my view. Spending our tax dollars setting up museums, what do they bring?
Well, I think it's a opportunity to not only learn, get to see things you ordinarily don't get to see, get to appreciate stories, information, develop an understanding of the heritage of a region, particularly for museums like ours that are very heritage-focused.
Yes.
It's the access to those stories and those objects that you might not otherwise have. And it's also places that is their profession and their purpose and their passion is to actually maintain and care for that heritage, because a lot of those, not only those stories, but those objects are not things that will preserve themselves. if there's not a place that is a public funded place that has that purpose of heritage preservation, they end up thrown away or in private collections, and people don't get to see those objects and don't get to learn those stories.
I would also add everything that Kelly has just said, that we are telling a story of interest to people. The past is not dead. The past isn't even past. It's still alive, and we're telling those stories, and we're making connections. I've always said the museums are about education, and education is about making connections. So what about this? How does this connect to something over on here? And it may not be initially obvious, but there's a way that they're connected, and it's part of our job to show, A, how they're connected, and B, what does that mean for us today, the heritage that Kelly was talking about. And then what does that mean going forward? So it's in the case of the state and the farm and ranch is a state, part of the state system. We're a state museum. We want people to know, A, it's a state museum, so therefore it's your museum, and we're telling your story. And if you think that's a good thing, then maybe, come visit and talk to other people. And I think that could be said for most every museum. The university museum's in the same category, is telling a story of interest to people, and they're telling people stories.
Yeah. Steve, you mentioned before we came on air that you could talk also a little bit about the Taylor Mesilla Historic, which I think may be our newest museum. It's the old house where J. Paul Taylor once lived, the former state legislator. And tell us a little bit about that one.
Yes, well, J. Paul and Mary Taylor willed the house to the state, the Department of Cultural Affairs, to be made into a historic site. And so as part of the Department of Cultural Affairs, which is where the state museums and historic sites like Fort Selden, Fort Stanton, and such are located, housed. And it is going to be the newest historic site, newest member of the Department of Cultural Affairs. Its grand opening will be the 8th of November. It's been a while going because it's an old house, and it's been a family house, and you try to keep the sense of it being what it was for the family growing up and keeping that intact but it also is an old house that needs remodeling and needs repairs and attention like any old house. And you also have to take into consideration it's no longer a private residence. It's going to be a public exhibit, public space, which means you have fire and safety. You have access. You have
accessible
a lot of things.
Bathrooms, for example.
All those things that you have to have.
Right.
And so how do you fit that in to the existing space and maintain the integrity of that? And so it's been a challenge, but it's been one of those things that's it's getting close now. They passed their inspection last week for the fire marshal, and no problems, and went through. Everything was just beautiful. So we're looking forward in the state to having that open. I know a lot of people in this area are looking forward. I expect to see a huge crowd on when they're open.
Sure. And will it just have artifacts from the family or
Mesilla in general?
Well, my understanding, and I've been a member of the advisory committee just because I'm where my position is with the Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum. And we will see, we'll get a chance to see the place today at the end of our advisory meeting. So I'm speaking a little ahead of what I actually know.
Yeah.
Even so, it's going to have a lot of the things, of course, that the Taylor family had. So it's a family residence and shows what was going on. But it's going to have some places where you can't get in safely because it's kind of a tight space, like into the kitchen area, dining area for the kitchen. But you can get in there, you can look around, we can have the photographs, maybe some sound in the background. What would it be like to have heard the family talking over dinner in a place like that, to give you the sense of what it would have been like to have had people there in the house and not just simply a picture, a pot, a piece of art over here. It's not intended to be static. Of course, as people have had the chance to visit that house over the years, and a lot of people have, it's an interesting house, and the Taylors have had an awful lot of interesting things in there, and it's trying to preserve that and tell that story. But you're also right. It's not merely about the Taylors. It's about Mesilla and this area. So it's why the Taylor Mesilla historic site. So they're telling more than just the story of the Taylor family. It's the community and this area.
And those two are so interconnected that just makes sense that they would go together.
Yes, and being where it's located right there on the plaza
means
that it's an attraction.
Mm-hmm.
And people have been waiting to go in and see it as a open space, and that's coming up soon.
How do you go about encouraging members of the community to visit your museums? I know the Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum has school trips, so I love your little play area for the little tiny ones that come. But how about with the university museum? Do you also have certain open hours? Do you encourage field trips from kids or just from the university students?
It's a little complicated. We do. So we have the public hours Tuesday through Saturday, 12 to 4. We try to advertise when we have events like new exhibit openings. Our next exhibit opening is going to be March, Friday the 13th in March, and it's going to be an exhibit on Cabinets of Curiosity. And university museums is the intellectual descendants of Cabinets of Curiosity, which makes for a really fun exhibit because it's a chance to show off just weird crap we have in our museum.
That will be interesting.
Yeah. What does that mean? That it's weird crap.
Yeah, it's the idea that you had the kind of early Enlightenment era people, like wealthy people, going around and collecting unique objects to tell stories.
Right.
And that is sort of where a lot of the idea of museums came from, right? And seeing how that's manifest in university museums still. We try to do outreach when we have events. So we have, and in fact, because the University Art Museum and other collections on campus, there's a Zoll Museum that specializes in geology. There's an arthropod museum that specializes in bugs. We have a vertebrate collection for research primarily of all kinds of vertebrates. We have the special collections and archives. We're actually doing an event on October 30th that is Nightmare at the Museums, plural, to try to actually bring people in to get a chance to see these different collections that we have on campus. And some of them are housed in museums that are more public-oriented, right? So develop exhibits so that we can share the objects we have and share the stories with the public. Some of them are primarily repositories for research purposes, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so chances for people to come do research. And so we try to make it known to those communities as well. So students can come to our museums, students work in our museums, but also we're engaging with the people who are most connected to what we have. So for us, you know, we have archaeological researchers coming to visit and people who are interested in the history of the region who want to look at certain objects we have. For the art museum, they're working, doing these active collaboration with artists and bringing them down and doing programming around that. So there's a lot of emphasis on sort of getting the word out through news releases, oftentimes when we're doing public events, because those are the things that are most likely to draw a crowd when we have those kinds of stories.
Okay. And you, in addition to school trips, the Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum, I remember you used to have some public history dramas and things like that.
We did, and that got discontinued partly when we had the shutdown during the COVID.
Yeah.
And a lot of things, bringing them back online is a bit of a challenge. And that was, we've been thinking about how can we bring some of that back and do it so it's historically accurate and there's something that we can substantiate what the stories are and done well. And so I've got some ideas that we've been discussing about how can we bring some of that back. But a lot of that went out. Just everything came to a stop in some batter.
Yes, that's right. And then it takes a while to be able to re-energize, get it back going again.
Because you have people who've left because the shutdown, and then they don't come back and participate like they did before. Mm-hmm. And then we have to face it, some folks, we all get older, and some folks don't have as much energy. I get older, and I know I don't have the energy I used to have, although
yes,
I think I still have
I
it.
I hear you, yes.
We've been having such a nice discussion. I hate to bring politics into it, but I'm going to. It's the era that we live in. And we have seen a real attempt to kind of, museums are repositories of history. And that when we fight over our history, we don't agree on our history. We have vigorous disagreements about our history. And we are seeing that play out now in an attempt at the national level to remake a lot of the exhibits that are in our museums. And I'm just curious, as people who live that life every day, if you have any thoughts about that at all.
I believe in trying to tell a balanced story of what actually happened. I think that's really what it comes down to. What does it mean? Try to make the connections, as we were mentioning before. The Farm and Ranch Heritage Museums had a little bit of controversy in the past, and for certain exhibits to go up and you have some disagreements. But basically, we don't try to take one side or another side. We try to say, you know, there's your side, my side, and the truth, and we try to get the truth out there. And I suspect that's true for just about all the museums we have.
We have had some fallout in terms of funding. We had an IMLS grant that was employing our students that was terminated and then restarted in the last year. So it has created, we're pretty underfunded, the university museums, just by nature, right? Like, it's a hard thing to prioritize. And so we have one full-time staff person, which is why we do sometimes receive school groups, but it's pretty challenging for us because we don't have staff to go through. And so we rely really heavily on our students to help in work study positions, to help as volunteers, to be involved all the way through the process. And so funding fluctuations that affect our students are really challenging, especially because they do so much work and such good work and so much more than they're actually getting funded for in most cases. But we're trying to do our mission no matter what the context is. So it's kind of all we can do, the best we can do. We have our collections that our job is to make sure they're available for research, make sure that they're available for community education and to try to work from those and out rather than be responsive to the winds of time, I guess.
I understand completely. Once again, I want to go over we're down to our last few minutes, so I want to go over the schedule one more time. This is the Academy for Learning and Retirement. All of these presentations will be at Donniana Community College. They will start on Tuesday, October 7th, with Emily Wilson and Alexandria McKinney of the Taylor Messiah Historic Site. On Thursday, October 9th, will be Kelly Jenks, who has been joining us today from the University Museum at Kent Hall at NMSU. On October 14th is Steve Loring from the New Mexico Farm and Ranch Heritage Museum. And it will wrap up on October 16th with Marissa Sage from the NMSU Art Museum. So just In our final minutes, anything we haven't asked you or any final points that you think it's important to be made?
Come visit.
Yeah.
We have a lot of interesting things, and that's true for the museums on campus. It's true for the museums around the city. It's true for all of us. Come visit. We've got interesting things, interesting stories to tell.
I would echo that. I've been to all of these places. They're incredible resources for this community, and a lot of people have experienced them once but don't realize we have new people, new stories all the time. Come back. And some people who don't even know they're there, please come. They're incredible resources.
I would add one thing.
Yeah.
If you've been there in the past, come back and see us again. Come back and see us, visit us again for the first time. We're not the same as we always were.
Yeah. And we didn't, you know, I wanted to get into the buckboards. What, just your collection of buckboards and the old-time transportation. We do have a minute here at the end. Can you talk a little bit about that?
We cover the whole thing about technology, how that's affected society, how it's affected how we practice agriculture, and how it transports all the whole system of how agriculture works and society works. So we've got that whole thing about the old carretas that we have from the Spanish coming up the Camino Real, and as it's progressed into the modern, it's come out and see. We got a lot of interesting things.
Well, thank you all so much. Thank you for joining us. Thank everybody for listening.